Spring 1933, Duke Ellington celebrates his 34th birthday with his world-renowned orchestra. Mahatma Gandhi begins a three-week hunger strike. The first plane flies over Mount Everest. Beer sales return to some U.S. states as the full repeal of Prohibition nears. Germany's newly appointed Chancellor Adolf Hitler opens the Dachau concentration camp. And a young ball player from the Bronx starts his rookie campaign with the Detroit Tigers. This year marks the 80th anniversary of Hank Greenberg's first season. Greenberg's storied career is celebrated not only for his excellence on the diamond, but also for the adversity Hammer and Hank overcame during one of the world's most turbulent periods. The life and times of the Tiger great are described in depth in the new John Rosenberg book, Hank Greenberg, the Hero of Heroes. WKAR's Peter Wharf brings us the first of his two-part series with Rosenberg. John explains Greenberg's early career challenges in gaining acceptance with fellow players and fans.
It wasn't unusual in the day for kids like Greenberg, whose parents had emigrated from other countries, to feel a separate or alienated from mainstream American culture. And what set Hank apart additionally was the fact that he was Jewish, and so he was a marked minority in the United States. And his parents, like many parents of their generation, didn't understand baseball and what it meant to America. Their ambition for their children, especially in coming to a new country and leaving behind the old world, was to provide better opportunity for their children. In Hank's family's case, that meant going to college. They had four kids. All four went to college. Hank was the only one who didn't finish college, much to his parents' dismay. But they'd wanted him to better himself. And he saw an opportunity to make a living and also to assimilate playing baseball. And so there was this natural conflict between immigrants and their children born here centered around baseball.
You quote Greenberg saying, with the chapter entitled The Elusive Hebrew Star, Greenberg says, "I was singled out all the time. Being Jewish and the object of a lot of derogatory remarks kept me on my toes all the time. I could never relax and be one of the boys." And that's a theme that comes through, is this sort of self-consciousness and inability to just sort of let go.
He always felt that he was not just a ball player, but a Jewish ball player. He very much wanted to be a ball player, one of the guys. But he was forever identified as a Jewish ball player. Of course, back in the 30s when he broke into the league, ethnic identification was much stronger, whether one's parents had come from Italy, Germany, Poland, or in Hank's case, Romania, as Orthodox Jews. There was a strong identification with that group. However, and there was also a viciousness among the bench jockeying and the comments from the fans where they would yell ethnic slurs at players. The difference was that sometimes there are three, four, five Italians on the field to absorb those insults, or three, four, five Irish guys. But Hank was usually the only Jew on the field, and so he became this lone target where he stood alone. He also played first base, which was often next to the other team's dugout, and so he was an easy target for them. He frequently was the object of derision and scorn directed at him, and particularly for being Jewish.
John, another scene that you point out relating to what you just said is Hank's returning as a Tiger to play at Yankee Stadium, to play New York. And you would think, having grown up in the Bronx, an area with a large Jewish community, his hometown, maybe there's a certain safety there. But no, as you just said, and again, this is from your book, you write, John, the New York club often called up a minor leaguer specifically to harass Greenberg from the bench. If he got ejected for verbal abuse, the team didn't suffer. In one game, when a particularly vicious comment about Hank's Jewishness flew from the Yankee bench, Hank stomped over to the dugout and challenged the entire team to fight. No one stirred, though a couple of guys did say, "Sorry." I love that scene. Not only for the imagery of Big Hank going over and challenging an entire baseball club to fight, but this idea that a player who might not be a key member in a particular game was actually assigned to this duty.
Yeah, Hank encountered the bigotry wherever he went. Yeah. It was in the stands. It was, as in this case, on the other team's bench. And it was all part of that psychological warfare that teams engaged in. And so the Yankees would bring up this guy who, as you read, if he got ejected, it didn't hurt the team any, but he became sometimes a very valuable member of that team simply for the abuse he could hurl Hank's way and trying to get him off his game to distract him. Now, to Hank's credit, he frequently didn't back down from those insults, but he challenged them straight on, as in this case, or another time when he went into the Chicago clubhouse after a game and he said, "I want the guy who called me a Jew bastard to say it to my face." And he walked around the room and nobody, he looked every player in the eye and the manager, and nobody spoke, of course. And as he left, one of Hank's teammates said, "Whoever said that was the luckiest guy around, because Hank would have torn him apart." But he other times responded with his bat, and that was where he gained a lot of respect as well, that he could channel his anger into success on the field, and it motivated him, it spurred him, because he wanted to be the best ball player, and he didn't want his Jewishness to be any sort of excuse, so he pushed himself to become the best. Now, I should mention, too, that strong ethnic identification worked in his favor as well, because just as there were bigots that he encountered everywhere he went, he also encountered a special interest group of fans. Other Jews looked to Hank and cheered him because he was Jewish. That meant, you know, when he went to St. Louis and New York and Philadelphia, there were fans that were rooting for Hank and against their team. Even in the World Series in Chicago, fans were rooting for Hank and against the Cubs simply because he was Jewish. So they were rooting for one of their own.
This is Peter Worf for Current State. I'm talking with the author, John Rosengren. We're talking about John's new book, Hank Greenberg, The Hero of Heroes. John, you paint some very vivid pictures of these times of great turmoil that Hank Greenberg lived in. The depression and attendance plunging throughout the early years of Hank Greenberg's career. When he's just coming up, our country is really going down economically. You point out that attendance plunged in the league in one of his first full seasons, 1933, to just over 6 million fans. That's after having been over 10 million fans just a couple of years before. And you also talk about the social climate in Greenberg's Detroit Tiger Town, specifically as it relates to Henry Ford and Father Coughlin of the Shrine of the Little Flower. Coughlin's red baiting and anti-Semitic messages, and then, of course, Ford's stance and his relationship with some of the German-related organizations of the 1930s.
Hank certainly entered a hostile environment when he came to Detroit. As you mentioned, his rookie year was 1933, and Henry Ford, the paterfamilias of the Motor City, was well known for his anti-Semitism. He was called the arch anti-Semite of America, and he was an inspiration to Adolf Hitler, who had a picture of Henry Ford in his office and awarded Ford in 1938 on the occasion of his 75th birthday with the highest honor a non-German citizen could receive.
The Grand Cross of the Supreme Order of the German Eagle.
Yes, and Ford accepted that honor. So you've got Henry Ford there, and then, as you mentioned, Reverend Coughlin, the Roman Catholic priest in suburban Detroit, who had a radio show with 10 million listeners that eagerly lapped up his screeds against Jews as being out to ruin capitalism and bring down Christianity. So here comes Hank, and the Jews in Detroit were very much a minority population, only 5% of the population. So a lot of Detroiters didn't know any Jews, didn't have a point of reference for Jews, and just believed this stuff that Ford and Coughlin fed them, much as they did around the country. So he had that going against him. At the same time, there's the Depression, which hit the Motor City hard and had shuttered factories and extended soup lines around the corners. Yet Greenberg and the Tigers gave Detroit fans something to cheer about. In 1934, when they clinched the pennant, Tiger fans were ecstatic. They thought it had been 25 years since they'd won a pennant, and now they had the chance to win it all. And baseball became a distraction and a positive diversion for people, a way to feel good about themselves in Detroit, where there wasn't much else to feel good about at the time.
Mr. Root looks over Mr. Greenberg, throws one in there, and there it is, Charlie, in the left field stands for a home run, and the Tigers have two more tallies.
We've talked a lot, John, about the opposition, to say the least, the hostile environment that Hank Greenberg faced during his career. But it's also interesting to note some of the close human connections that he made. And you mentioned very briefly, you paint a scene with Hank Greenberg and Ty Cobb. The Tiger great revealed his psychology of hitting to Hank. And that's sort of a curious scene to me, talking about a sometimes violent man who was known to be involved in hateful incidents, and yet he seemed to befriend, in some way, Hank Greenberg. Can you talk a little bit more about that story?
These two men who seem so different at first blush, as you mentioned, Cobb and Greenberg, shared in common the fact that they're both fiercely competitive and great hitters, students of the game. And Cobb, I think, welcomed Greenberg as a fellow Tiger to the city of Detroit, and so gave him this advice. He said how when he would go up and be in a tough situation, rather than feel intimidated by the pitcher, he'd look out at the pitcher and think, that poor SOB has to face the great Ty Cobb. And Greenberg realized the shift in mentality that could work in his favor and adopted it, and it gave him much more confidence as he came to the plate in pressure situations.
John Rosengren is the author of Hank Greenberg, The Hero of Heroes, published in 2013 by New American Library. John, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us about Hank Greenberg.
You're welcome, Peter. My pleasure. Thanks for your interest.
For Current State, this is Peter Wolf.